Good morning. So the last 2 years in a row, I've taught mindfulness at work at St. Thomas for a whole day. And when I do that, I teach different types of mindfulness, but I specifically teach two types of sitting meditation, which are classical Buddhist types. The first is focus, concentrated meditation, in which we can focus on our breathing, which is very often in Zen. We can focus on saying something to ourselves when we breathe. We can focus on specific sensations in our body. We can focus on our hara. This is called the hara. So it's a narrowing of the focus. Then I also teach bare awareness, panoramic awareness, which is a complement, but we're not. It's objectless awareness. There's no object. We're just aware. So I teach that, and we're gonna do a mini practice of both of those in a couple minutes. Both of them, though, are about paying attention in the present moment, without judgment, without evaluation. And when a judgment and evaluation comes up, that's okay. We just come back. In bare awareness or panoramic awareness meditation, there's no object. So senses, we experience sensory experience, we experience emotion, we experience thoughts, and with no object, sometimes we get sudden insights. Oh, we notice a feeling, and we notice its connection to a thought, and that's connection to a sensation, and that connected to a memory. So that seeing can be freeing. Not always, but sometimes it's quite freeing. In my second book, I call that watching the movie. And by watching the movie, this movie that's always going on, we get a deeper understanding of how we function. And when we do that, we have the possibility to not be caught so much by the movie. So now we're going to do maybe 5 minutes of practicing these things. Instead of 2 hours, 5 minutes. And you guys do this already, but I want you to understand the differentiation by practicing in case you haven't, and the complementary relationship between the two. So get in a nice meditative position, and Peter, maybe you can ring the bell. Peter's going to ring the bell. And as Peter rings the bell, start off by focusing on the sound. Concentrating on the sound. Bring it 3 times. And then you might want to do your breathing next. You might want to focus on your breathing. You might want to just follow your breathing all the way in and all the way out. And if it helps, you can add something to your breathing. You can add deep on the in-breath and peace on the out-breath, or present moment on the in-breath and only moment on the out-breath. It doesn't really matter. It's just helping you focus, helping you pay attention without judgment or evaluation. And then you might notice sensations in your body too and want to focus on those. Maybe some tension, maybe your lower abdomen. Doesn't really matter. Just focus. Just focus. Gentle, persistent focus. And it's fine to change focal points sometimes, or just stay with the same focal point. And when you're ready, if you feel like it, you might want to move into objectless awareness, awareness with no object. Just stopping, just looking, just listening. No object. Just stopping, just looking, just listening. No object. Just being. Just being. And if thoughts come through, that's fine. No need to get rid of them. Just stop, look, and listen. Not concentrating on anything. Just stopping, looking, and listening. And in a minute or so, Peter will ring the bell and we'll come back to the room. These are the two classical forms of meditation that are throughout the Buddhist tradition. Now, focus meditation in other schools in Zen also includes visual, as Ben talked about last week. But I didn't do visual because in Zen specifically, we were not taught visual. But I've done some visual before. So anyway, those two forms, there's a problem or a limitation to those two forms, and I'd just like to touch on that a little bit. We conceive of deep meditation as a state without thoughts. Oh, Tim's free of thoughts, or whatever, Suzuki or Kagura, oops, free of thoughts. And then we work hard to maintain a second best state, the observer, who is aware of but not involved with thoughts, feelings, and impulses. We think we need to maintain this detached self-consciousness. Oh, my zazen wasn't good this morning. I didn't concentrate. I couldn't concentrate. I was just thinking about work. I gotta concentrate more. Oh, this morning when my meditation, all this anger came up. Ah, all this anger. Now I'm going to really look into this anger. That's fine. That's fine. The problem is that if we get fixated on this, it divides our lives into two parts. Where we're consciously aware of going on, what's going on, that part, in the present moment, we're awake and present. Maybe that's 5% of the time, or 10% of the time, or maybe we get up to 12% or 14% of the time, if you're really honest with yourself. And then there's the rest of the time, when you're caught in the dream of thought, and you're missing, and you're missing. Well, then you get frustrated. Well, this meditation, or my ability to do this meditation, sucks. Maybe it's the meditation that sucks. Maybe I should try a different... No, maybe it's me that suck. Oh, it's both. Right? It's both. It's both. So we try harder. And we wonder why we still keep forgetting to be present. So, I'm teaching... Ted and I are leading practice period for my new book, that's come out, but I have to remember to get my book to the class on Wednesday night. Well, if I put my book on the kitchen table, I don't remember. If I put it on the stairs, I don't remember. I can only, the only way I can get it to class is to put it on my shoes. Because if I put it on my shoes, I have to remember which are my shoes. If I put it on Linda's shoes, I won't, then we won't get there. But if I put it on my shoes, usually it gets there. And I've only been practicing for 50 years, you guys. What's the deal here? What's the deal here? I must be doing something wrong. Mindfulness teachers tell us that eventually we're going to get better. And I'm supposedly a mindfulness teacher. Eventually, will I get better? Well, I'm going to be dying. Maybe I'll be better after I die. Most of our day, most of your days, you're not mindful. You're mindful for a moment, and then you're off. The second you think of something, you plan something, you engage in a conversation or a project, or get absorbed in your work or reading, you're off. Oh, that's just the nature of human consciousness. It's the nature of the mind to wander. Luckily, we are the Zen. We do Zen here. This is not just Buddhism, this is Zen. In Zen, mindfulness on all meditation techniques are just fingers pointing to the moon. Don't mistake the finger for the moon. The moon is big mind, Daishin, big mind, Daishin, which includes everything, all of us. Even if we're not mindful, we're still, it's our nature. And if you find the moon through your mindfulness meditation, that's wonderful. This is stuff I did not talk about in mindfulness at work, by the way. I've saved it for you guys. If you find the moon through mindfulness, super. But even absent-mindedness is a manifestation of Daishin, of big mind that includes everything and all of us. The energy of life that circulates through and includes everything. Absent-mindedness is fine. A little inconvenient. You know, I have to remember to put my book on my shoes. That's a deal. Everybody has something, right? Partly I'm absent-minded because my mother liked it. She called me when I was 9 years old the absent-minded professor, and that got into my storehouse consciousness. And it's still there. Still there. So how do we open to big mind? How do we open to Daishin? Can it be taught? Subjectless meditation. Subjectless. No subject. Daishin. Big mind. How do we open to it? So, I've told the story many times about starting a meditation group in my hometown of Palo Alto, and my teacher came down, and I was just a student. I was just young. I put an article in my hometown paper, so a lot of people came, and then my teacher showed us how to do Zazen, and he showed us how to do our posture and how to keep our heads and how to align our spine and everything. But that's all he told us. He didn't tell us anything else. And so we all sat there. And so then I said after the Q&A, Sensei, would you tell us something about what we should do with our mind when we do this? He said, no, I already gave the sitting instruction. You just sit. And I said, but can't you give them some advice about how to do this when their mind wanders? He said, no, I have no advice to give. Just sit. And I thought, then I was pissed. I was pissed. I was the one who put the article in my hometown newspaper, not him. And a lot of people didn't come back the next week. But then my teacher began teaching after that. And I won't say that one experience, but he had many experiences with us, that we might focus on our breathing. Because there's nothing in Dogen about focusing on your breathing. Nothing. Nada. He said, well, you could focus on your breathing. Then he began talking about focusing on your breathing. He about even talking about counting your breathing. Because he realized people need something. People want something. Or they just give up. They just feel hopeless. So that was his learning. Now, he never fessed up to me that he learned this, but I watched him. And he did learn it. He did learn what Americans needed. By watching. By stopping watching and listening. So now, if he were to come back now, he'd see we have all these different types of focus meditation, you know. We have loving-kindness meditation. We have all these guided meditations. I did a whole bunch at St. Thomas. And we have meditation apps. How many of you have tried meditation apps? Raise your hands. Oh, yeah, see? Meditation apps. Even my wife and daughter are doing meditation apps. Those are great. They're all fingers pointing to the moon. Pointing to the moon. The moon. Big mind. Your moon is right here. It's shining everywhere. Big mind. And how do we open up to the moon? How do we open up to it? Well, fingers are fine, but then we get mixed up and we think the finger is the moon. So one way of opening up is don't-know practice. Don't-know practice. Which I have talked about before, we've talked about before, don't know practice. Yunyuan asked Dao, how does the Bodhisattva of great compassion use so many hands and eyes? Dao said, it's just like a person in the middle of the night reaching in search of a pillow. The radical practice of don't know. Radical practice of don't know. And there's compassion there because we're not clinging. We're open. There's compassion, natural compassion. Case 20 from the Book of Equanimity. Daizang asked his student Fa Yan, where are you going? Fa Yan said, I'm wandering aimlessly. What do you think of wandering, said the teacher. I don't know, said Fa Yan, looking puzzled. Not knowing is most intimate, said the teacher. Fa Yan was suddenly awakened. So wandering aimlessly. We think, oh, we shouldn't be wandering aimlessly. But it's an accurate description of how our own mind wanders aimlessly and endlessly through its patterns of thinking and feeling. Right? Right? Is that bad? Bad me. Bad. But what about admitting that we don't know on the very deepest level? We can taste what Fa Yan discovered, the great intimacy of not knowing, not puzzled, intimate. Puzzled, it leads into intimacy. Intimate, still connected. My teacher said, if you want to tame your sheep or your cow, give it a large, spacious meadow. Give it a large, spacious meadow. Subjectless meditation is radical in the sense that it's the root that opens to big mind, that emanates from big mind. It's the root. It's not the root down here. It's the root right here. Right here. And we can treasure and celebrate the moments when we are awake and we're not caught by the commentator, instead of beating ourselves up for all of our forgetfulness. We can do that, don't you think? We can do that. You don't know, and you don't need to know. So here's a story about Milton Erickson that I have not told in a few years. The Zen master and psychiatrist Milton Erickson grew up in rural Wisconsin. And he grew up in a farming area, and he was actually crippled from the waist down for years. And but he was he loved to ride horses. You could ride horses. You don't need, you do need your legs. I don't know, but he loved to ride horses. He was a good horse. So he was in rural Wisconsin, and he, after high school one day, he was on his way home, and a lost horse showed up at the high school, just, you know, because this is rural, just showed up. So Milton got on the horse. He got on the horse. And he just stayed with the horse and rode the horse. And after a while, the horse showed up at a farm and went into the farm and went to the barn and showed up at the barn. And the farmer came running out of the barn. He said, "Oh, thank you. Hey, thank you. You brought my horse home. How did you know where I lived? How did you know how to find my house and my barn?" And Milton said, "I didn't know, but the horse knows. The horse knows. The horse knows, you guys. It knows. Not something you have to practice. Well, you can practice it, but it already knows. Before you practice, it already knows. Don't know mind. Don't know mind. Is the entryway to big mind, to Daishin." So instead of the finger pointing through focused or bare awareness, just be. The moon is a way of being. It just bees. And don't know helps us move beyond the you who's trying to meditate. So we can just enjoy. Big mind. Big mind. Daishin needs trusting. Needs trusting. Needs us to trust. When we do trust, we feel safe. We feel nurtured. We feel protected. We're being a being. And we're supported by all life and just being a being. In spite of our traumas. In spite of our commentary, in spite of our absent-mindedness, or maybe because of it, maybe including it. Big mind doesn't kick anything out. Maybe including all that stuff. Not a point of view, not a kind of understanding, not a transcendent experience. Oh, sorry, not a transcendent experience. Not a code of ethics. Just be. As you meditate, as you speak, as you drive, as you eat, as you brush your teeth, as you forget where you put your book and then forget where you put your shoes so you can't find either book or your shoes. Moi. Moi. So we'll do one more guided meditation. Oops. We'll do one more guided meditation. In Buddhism there's a lot of advice about going to funeral pyres and meditating. A lot of advice. Corpse meditations. And not like in yoga where you are the corpse, but like going to the cemetery. Where they don't, not like Lakewood Cemetery, where everything's in a coffin and buried under the ground. These Indian cemeteries, the bodies are just there, you guys. So, lots of meditations on death. Well, why? Well, why? Because, dying is a gate into big mind. Don't know. Beyond puzzlement, gateway into big mind, into subjectless awareness, right? Subjectless awareness. So now we're going to do a death meditation, which I invented just for this occasion. I wanted to do it in mindfulness at work, but I knew they would run away and never come back. And when they did the avows, they would not be so good. So I saved it for you guys. Okay, so take your meditation posture. Follow your breathing if you'd like. And I'll just talk to you for a little while. Imagine you've reached the end of your life. and you lie on your deathbed surrounded by loved ones. This is it. You don't know what is going to happen. No more can be done. You may even want to tear up your long to-do list and throw it away. Your many unfulfilled desires, your many dreams, your many responsibilities are fading into the background. You don't know what's happening or what's going to happen. And you may begin to accept things as they are. I don't know if you're beginning to open up to a sense of peaceful spaciousness. I don't know if you're opening up to a peace that's deeper than any thought or emotion that passes through. I don't know if you will begin to fade into no-thingness, into big mind. I don't know if it's possible for you to trust the process of living and dying. You might even feel the rays of the full moon radiating within you and around you. I don't know. You might experience a peace that is so deep that it can never be understood. I really don't know. And in another minute or so, Peter will ring the bell, and you'll come back to the room, come back to life, knowing that life and death are not separate at all. They're different, but they're intimate. Intimate. So is it possible for us to start showing up for experience without questioning its validity, whatever the experience is? Letting go of the agenda of both ego and superego? Rest in something we don't understand and don't need to understand? Daishin. Big mind. No mind. Beginner's mind. Shin. Daishin. Big. Mushin, no. Shushin, is that right? Shushin, beginner's mind. Same, exactly the same. And then, of course, they say heart mind, so. So, Dogen says, what need is there for our concentrated effort? Oh, Dogen was on to this. Indeed, the whole body is far beyond the world's dust. This body, this frail body. Who could believe in a means to brush it clean? So-called mindfulness. So-called mindfulness. It's never apart from you, right where you are, right where we are. This means embracing our private parts, you guys. Our aspirations, our selfishness, our love, our lust, our inner glutton. My inner glutton is always pretty active. Well, not always. It's only active when it gets a thought of food or smells food. Your inner ascetic? Oh, you're going to do sashin now, you're going to do retreat. How's your inner ascetic doing? Embrace it. Embrace it instead of being so ascetic about your asceticism. Embrace it. Your body, your thoughts, your hopes, your fears, your guilt, your passion, your blood, your bones, your tears. My teacher said, to give your sheep or cow a large, spacious pasture is the way to control them. Wholehearted. Half-hearted is divided. Part of you wants one thing, another part of you wants another. But inner division is part of being human. You're not bad because you experience inner division. Half-hearted is big mind too. Big mind doesn't kick anything out. Half-minded, hearted, quarter-hearted, no-hearted, still big mind. Practicing don't know is not about picking a winning side or pretending we have no inner conflict. Right now, there seems to be a huge tsunami happening culturally in the United States. And many of us experience a tsunami inside at the same time. Great division. But can we experience the undividedness of big mind right within that division? Right here. Right here, nowhere else. Not later on. Not later on. No apologies. Or apologize if you want. That's fine. That's part of big mind too. Stop waiting to become someone else. Stop waiting to become enlightened. Stop waiting for perfect mindfulness. Stop waiting for complete happiness. Big mind, Daishin. Instead of trying to get calm or spacious or enlightened in your meditation practice or thinking about what you should and shouldn't do, channel your passion into being fully alive right now. Right now. Trust yourself because your moon nature is shining on everything. Dogen writes about the moon. And he says, the full moon is wonderful. But even when there's a half moon, the moon is full. Even when there's a quarter moon, the moon is full. Even when there's no moon at all, the moon is full. Big mind, you guys. It's full. It's full. Right here. Right here. And within big mind, habit energy makes me want to eat as much chocolate cake as I can. Yesterday I was at Lund's, and I'm not supposed to have sugar, so I was trying to find the chocolate with the least amount of sugar. I spent 20 minutes looking for the chocolate with the least amount of sugar. That's happening with Big Nine, too. That's habit energy within Big Mind. Habit energy. Doing don't know practice. How you do know, don't know practice right? I want to do it right. It's subjectless don't know practice. It doesn't know anything about right. You got to go deeper if you think it's about right or wrong. Deeper into your don't know practice. Then you experience intimacy, which is joy and love and connection, but also some suffering. But connection and joy and love is at the base here. The base. So we practice focused meditation, we practice objectless meditation, panoramic awareness, with a don't know attitude. And we can let it take up all our mental and emotional space. Then there's nothing left for observing. We don't have to worry about getting it right. When we feel fragmented, discouraged, anxious, depressed, we can just give our sheep or cow a large, spacious pasture. Instead of beating ourselves up for not being one with our activity, we open up to our moon nature, to our Buddha nature. And the personification of big mind in Buddhism is Prajnaparamita, the personification. Prajna means wisdom, paramita that has gone beyond. Has gone beyond any point of view that we get stuck on. Even that we should be practicing don't know mind. You might get stuck on that after you leave. Oh, I should be practicing don't know mind. This is prajnaparamita, the wisdom that goes beyond all those. It doesn't diss them, it just goes beyond their limitations. And prajnaparamita in Mahayana Buddhism is also personified as the mother of all Buddhas. The mother of all Buddhas. Big mind. Personification of big mind. The mother. Our mother. The mother. Maybe not the mother we had, but a mother who unconditionally loves us and accepts us. Because we're flesh of her flesh. We're all flesh of her flesh. All of us. Even the absent-minded ones. Even the ones who eat chocolate when they should be really taking care of themselves and getting ready for a hot suit so they don't. So poor Ted isn't stuck again when I'm lying in bed. He had to do it more than once. But that's big mind. Big mind embraces her children. The mama embraces her children. She knows they're doing the best they can. They have habit energy that kind of screws them up sometimes. But she loves them all the more for their frailty. For their frailty. So that's what I want to say. That's what I want to say today, you guys. And have a little time for questions or comments. Francie. Sure.
There's this phrase when guiding meditation, and then often teachers say, like you do, at the end, come back to the room. But where did we go? We were here all along.
Oh, big mind. Big mind. Yes, we were here all along. Yes. Yes. Uh-huh. We're supported by big mind all along. On the other hand, there's a relative world within that absolute world, within that mother. And the relative world is that we, when we're doing a guided meditation, often we're distracted and somewhere else, and you want to come back to listening to the speaker. Yeah, that's all. That's all. But you're right. It's all big mind. It's all big mind. There's nowhere to come. No place to go. Yep. Okay, what else? Steve.
So, it just seems to me that it's nice that big mind is so capacious, but...
So capacious, yeah.
So spacious, but does big mind want to get anywhere? I mean, and ultimately big mind, you know, I mean, it's where we all want to get, and you can't get beyond big mind. It seems to me that big mind might want a little more spaciousness for all of us.
Oh, big mind is offering us so much spaciousness continually, infinite spaciousness. But we don't feel its love. We don't feel love, so we're not aware that this infinite spaciousness it's always offering us that. But because we get caught up in things and feel like we're not good enough or the world's not good enough, we don't see it. So big mind, prajnaparamita is reminding us of that. Yeah, Mark.
Putting your book on the shoe. You mentioned putting your book on your shoes.
Yes.
Remember it.
Yes.
Almost every night I put my wallet and my keys in the refrigerator. Invariably the next morning when I can't find my wallet and my keys, I tell the story about how my wife always reorganizes the house so I can't find my wallet and my keys, and then she reminds me that.
Okay. Well, I don't think this guy better teach mindfulness. He can teach absent mindfulness.
Yeah.
I probably shouldn't be teaching mindfulness either. I can teach absent mindfulness. Big mind. Absent, we're not absent. But everything is present in the absence of anything but the full moon shining everywhere. Everything's present in that absence, that dark sky surrounding the full moon. Anything else? Thank you.